With the latest in agriculture news from across the state and the country, it's Farm City News Day. And here's your host, Sabrina Hill.
Good morning. Thanks for joining us this morning for your agriculture news. Today's Thursday, November 16th. Coming up in today's show, we have information on the cotton outlook heading into 2018. That's coming up in a little bit, but first, Monsanto and U.S. farm groups are suing California to stop the state from issuing cancer warnings on the company's herbicide glyphosate. California added glyphosate to a list of cancer-causing chemicals. Glyphosate, of course, is the main ingredient in Roundup. For more than 40 years, glyphosate has been used by U.S. farmers to kill weeds before planting corn fed to livestock. In the U.S., the herbicide has been considered safe since 2013, when Monsanto received approval from the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency for increased tolerance levels for glyphosate. A study published in the Journal of National Cancer Institute found no relation between glyphosate and cancer, but two U.S. agricultural workers have recently sued Monsanto, claiming the company's weed-killing herbicide caused their cancers. Meanwhile, a state spokesperson says California is considering a proposal known as the No Significant Risk Level, under which certain goods that meet a certain standard for containing low amounts of glyphosate could be sold without warnings. One analyst says U.S. rice exports are facing headwinds. Gary Crawford explains.
U.S. growers of wheat, soybeans, cotton, and corn all are seeing their crops exports increasing significantly in this past 2017 fiscal year, going up from 6% on up to 70%. One big item missing from that list? Rice. U.S. rice exports dropped 3%, and it doesn't look good for this year. Agriculture Department Outlook Board Chairman Seth Meyer says, of course, one reason is a 20% smaller crop this year. There's not as much product to sell, but there's more to it than that.
What we've seen is we're not very competitive outside the Western Hemisphere, and within the Western Hemisphere, we've seen some increase in competition from South America. And that's what's giving us some challenging headwinds for our export campaign for this year.
And so USDA has just lowered its rice export forecast another 2 million hundredweight, which could take exports down by almost 13 million, or about 11%. But because U.S. rice production's down so much, growers could still see higher prices than last season. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Washington.
Specialty Crop News, brought to you by the Almond Board of California. Find them online at almonds.com. When planning for the future, many farmers want to be certain their land will remain farmland. That's why Tom Olm, president of Olm Farms, Inc., chose to check into a farmland trust.
Well, it's basically selling the development rights so that the owner, myself, could never sell it for development. It'd have to stay in farming. And it reduced the value. Before my dad passed away, he actually got into the trust, so it reduced the value to where I could afford to buy into it and continue farming.
He says it takes a bit of time, but he and his family thought it was worth the effort.
Yeah, it is. And I did a lot of thinking about it, but I've seen other people who have sold out for development and strip malls and stuff, and money didn't do them any good. Mm-hmm. I'd be much happier to keep the land and just continue farming if I can put food on the table, basically, and stay in business.
You can find more information online. We've put a link on our website. With renegotiations ongoing, U.S. ag producers stress how important the North American Free Trade Agreement has been to their industries. Stephanie Ho has more on the story.
It's not a huge secret that the North American Free Trade Agreement, or NAFTA, has been good for U.S. agricultural producers.
Mexico has been our largest customer the last two marketing years. Folks may not realize that, but Mexico is a huge buyer of U.S. wheat.
That was Steve Mercer with the U.S. Wheat Associates, who was at the National Association of Farm Broadcasting's annual convention.
Our biggest concern is that we have seen a huge growth in demand for U.S. wheat in Mexico, largely because of NAFTA. It opened up a whole new market, and it's a market that's next door. Literally 45% of the wheat that we export to Mexico is sent by rail directly into Mexico.
Canada and Mexico also are big consumers of U.S. pork.
Mexico is our number one volume, maybe number two as far as value. Sometimes it bounces back and forth. Canada is the number four as far as volume and value.
That was Jim Heimer, president-elect of the National Pork Producers Council.
We need to have trade with them. We just can't lose it. We can't have them putting tariffs on them. We have to be able to trade with them because they are number one and number four. 40% of our trade goes to those two countries.
The message has come through, do no harm to U.S. agriculture.
Jason Halfmeister is USDA's trade counsel.
80% of our cotton exported, 80% of our tree nuts sold overseas, half our wheat, half our soybeans, half our rice, substantial shares of livestock products, fruits and vegetables, all find a home overseas.
He says the Department of Agriculture gets it.
That means in Washington, when we're having trade policy discussions, how to handle NAFTA, how to handle China, the administration's got the message, we've got to protect agriculture's interests.
With agreements like NAFTA, he says the U.S. government certainly does not want to move backward, but at the same time also doesn't want to forget that it has to move forward. He pointed to what he described as substantial new opportunities for U.S. agriculture in terms of expanding market access in Asian countries like China, Japan, Indonesia, and Vietnam. This is Stephanie Ho for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Sweet potatoes, not just for Thanksgiving anymore, finding their way in a variety of year-round products. Rod Bain reports.
One of the more popular side dishes of the Thanksgiving Day dinner is the sweet potato. But in recent years, that vegetable has become more than just a Thanksgiving time dish.
I'm not sure why it's taken so long for the sweet potato to become so popular.
That's according to Jennifer Fishburne of University of Illinois Extension. She's a big fan of the nutritional content of sweet potatoes.
Sweet potatoes have no fat. They are low in sodium. They are high in fiber. They're cholesterol-free. They contain lots of minerals and vitamins, including vitamin A, vitamin C, beta-carotene. They're best if you can cook them with the skin on. That's when you're going to have the most nutrition. But they just are an overall healthy vegetable crop that we can combine in many ways.
She says both a recent expansion of marketing efforts and in products has grown the interest in sweet potatoes among consumers.
The sweet potato fries, definitely, we see those at a lot of the state fairs. That really opens the eyes for folks to realize that the sweet potato is used in other ways than just at Thanksgiving dinner with a little brown sugar and marshmallows and butter sprinkled on top, that it can be used in many other ways, from casseroles to bake to soups and chili. There's even sweet potato ice cream, pancakes, pudding, and you're starting to see the pancakes actually on menus of restaurants.
Of course, consumers can enjoy sweet potatoes at home as well. First things first, when going to the store to purchase fresh sweet potato or growing them in the backyard garden, keep in mind that sweet potatoes and yams, both similar and popular Thanksgiving dinner side dishes, are really not one and the same.
Sweet potato is actually a root. It's an expanded root, and a yam is a tuber. But the biggest difference that we know is that they are actually two separate vegetables from two separate families, so they're not even related. The yam actually grows in the tropics. You may find it occasionally in southern tips of the United States, people trying to grow it, but it is grown in the tropics, whereas sweet potatoes grow quite nicely throughout most of the United States, particularly the southern states.
Now, Jennifer Fishburne, what should consumers look for when it comes to a fresh sweet potato at their local store or from the garden?
What they're going to look for is a firm, smooth-skinned potato that's going to be free of any soft spots. Avoid things with any bruises or decay spots. They're not going to keep as long with any soft spots, bruising, or decay.
She says while orange is the most familiar color of sweet potato, various cultivars can range in color from white to reddish-orange. I'm Rod Payne reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
This is Farm City News Day by AgNet West. I'm Sabrina Hill. We will be back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
Control weeds from the start with the proven long-lasting power of Chateau Herbicide SW. Chateau controls more than 90 annual broadleaf and grass weeds in orchards and vineyards, including marestail, fleabane, mallow, and more. Unlike the competition, Chateau can be applied to non-bearing orchards and vineyards after planting for early protection. Take control and keep control of tough weeds with Chateau Herbicide. To learn more, talk to your PCA or visit valet.com/chateau. Always read and follow label instructions.
Step right up and gaze upon this miraculous substance I hold in the palm of my hands. This little miracle can feed us, clothe us, give us clean, fresh water, and provide wildlife habitat for nature's critters. Ladies and gentlemen, I present to you the greatest soil on earth.
Learn more about soil health principles that can turn your soil into a star performer. Contact your local USDA Natural Resources Conservation Service office today to find out how. This message brought to you by USDA and this radio station.
There's nothing convenient about losing profit. A two-implant program utilizing component TE-200 with Tylan as the terminal implant increases feed efficiency by 3.8% over Revelor XS. That's more than a $15 feed savings per animal. And only Elanco's component implants give you the added benefit of Tylan's abscess defense. Contact your Elanco sales rep or visit elanco.us/implants today. The label contains complete use information, including cautions and warnings. Always read, understand, and follow label directions.
As an almond grower, you work hard all day right from the crack of dawn. You love your crop, your land, and those who helped you raise it. Join Almond Board of California at the Sacramento Convention Center from December 5th through the 7th to learn how your operation can thrive. Hear from industry experts on new innovations and research, and connect with more than 270 exhibitors on the trade show floor and see their products firsthand. You care about your legacy, and the Almond Board does too. Go to almondconference.com to learn more and register.
Welcome back to Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. Here's Brian German.
Cotton harvest is coming along quickly, and reports indicate excellent quality this year. After a few years of exceptional yields, this year looks like a return to average, mostly due to Liguus problems and the summer heat wave. President and CEO of the California Cotton Ginners and Growers Association, Roger Isom, talked about what the industry is looking forward to in 2018.
Price isn't bad. It's a decent price. Seed price is not great, but it's not bad either. And the biggest thing is we've got water. I think things are lining up for another good year in 2018. You know, hopefully the rain will keep coming, but we're starting off in a really good position. The reservoirs are way up compared to what it's been for the last 3 or 4 years. And the biggest thing is we hope we'll get an allocation announcement much sooner than we did last year, where, you know, it's April and May and, oh yeah, we've got 85% and then eventually 100%. But by that time, planning decisions were long past made.
I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
Well, in today's livestock news, the World Trade Organization has ruled in favor of the U.S. in a dispute over Indonesia's complex import requirements for a number of agricultural products, and that includes U.S. beef. And according to a story from Joe Sheely, that ruling is expected to open up significant new export opportunities for U.S. beef in that market.
The United States scored an important win at the World Trade Organization when it successfully challenged Indonesia's import restrictions on a number of agricultural products, including U.S. beef. U.S. Meat Export Federation Senior Vice President Thad Lively has more details in this USMEF report.
This is an important win for the U.S. This is one of those cases that was really well suited to take to the WTO because Indonesia has in place a number of import restrictions that are pretty clearly inconsistent with what the rules of the WTO say. And a lot of this has been driven by the fact that at times they've had a policy of becoming self-sufficient in beef, trying to import a lot of live cattle and build up a beef industry of their own. That's going to be very difficult for them to do, and I think increasingly that's become apparent. So I think that this WTO ruling comes at a good time while Indonesia is reconsidering its policy on beef consumption and beef production and self-sufficiency.
One important benefit of the ruling is that it gives exporters and importers confidence that the market will remain open to U.S. beef.
It should open up opportunities in Indonesia like we've never seen. Indonesia is, of course, the fourth largest country in the world by population. But if you look at their per capita beef consumption, it's really quite small. To us, that says there's huge potential for the United States beef industry. Today, of course, Indonesia is a market for lower value muscle cuts and variety meats, but that'll change over time as incomes grow and the middle class grows. So I have no doubt that this is a market where the U.S. industry can do very well, can be quite competitive, and where we can carve out an identity for high quality U.S. beef, just as we have in so many other countries around the world.
For more information, please visit usmef.org. For the U.S. Meat Export Federation, I'm Joe Sheely.
Thanks, Joe. And U.S. poultry groups are also pleased that the WTO confirmed Indonesia's import restrictions for horticultural products and animals and animal products being against WTO rules. The USA Poultry and Egg Export Council, National Chicken Council, National Turkey Federation all echo comments made by U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer, who said the WTO action should result in increased export opportunities for U.S. farmers and ranchers. In its decision, WTO found that the 18 Indonesia measures challenged by the U.S. were inconsistent with Indonesia's WTO obligations. The poultry industry estimates the potential markets for U.S. poultry exports to that country at 170,000 metric tons annually. That's at a value of $177 million. I'm Randall Wiseman for AgNet West. AgriView with Everett Greiner is next.
It may take years for Florida to overcome the devastating damage Hurricane Irma did to the industry's citrus crop, but most of the impact will be felt only by the Sunshine State citrus farmers. There won't be any shortage of oranges nor orange juice. One reason is Brazil is expected to harvest a crop of 365 million boxes of oranges this year, and they expect to export a good portion of it to the U.S. But that's not the only thing. California and our other citrus-producing states will harvest their usual crops this year, and that will be sufficient to supply the needs of U.S. consumers. But the Brazilian crop I mentioned will be the biggest in the last 4 years, and export of orange juice to the U.S. is expected to produce enough to prevent any shortages. What all this means is consumers should not see any bulge in consumer prices. And that's AgriView for today. Everett Greiner, AgNet West.
In today's interview segment, Jamie Johansson finds out about the upcoming NCBA conference. Here's the interview.
We are at the 2017 NAFB Trade Talk in the National Cattlemen's Beef Association booth, and Marvin Cox is here with me. Marvin, let's talk about the 2018 convention that is coming up here in Phoenix. Give us some highlights.
It's going to be a great show where hotel rooms are selling fast, registrations are going strong, but some of the highlights, you know, everybody loves in the beef industry is a foodie. Well, we have Reed Drummond, the pioneer woman, to celebrate. She's our opening general session speaker. She's going to be fantastic. We look forward to having her share her kind of success about and what she's doing to really promote beef and promote agriculture in general. We're excited about that. Then we have Jim Abbott. Jim is a former professional baseball player. One thing that made him unique, he was a baseball pitcher who has one hand. Tremendous story. Cy Young winner, I believe, and just he was a World Series MVP. Tremendous story. We have a trade show with it's close to 8 acres this year. We have indoor and outdoor exhibit space in Phoenix. Ton of education through Cattlemen's College, through our learning lounges within our trade show. Oh, and by the way, Jamie, we have entertainment, believe it or not. So we have Bill Engvall. And then we all have two of the gentlemen from Whose Line Is It Anyway for our Friday night event. So there's something for everyone at the convention this year.
Well, and you guys cover it all. You have education, you have networking, you have communications, and you have entertainment, the entire thing. So, you know, coming off the coat strings of 2017 in Nashville with record attendance, of course, heading west to Phoenix, transportation and logistics sometimes hinder, you know, complete registration. But you talk about the trade show, you know, talk about 8 acres of that and the Cattlemen's College. Let's hit more a little bit on the educational side and those opportunities that cattlemen and women from across the country can take part of in the Cattlemen's College.
Yeah, we have sessions at virtually anywhere from animal health to estate planning to really the business part of the farming and ranching that the cattlemen need to understand. We've got basically a day and a half of education. Plus, we have hands-on training on cattle handling. So it's really, you know, cattlemen are visual learners, so they'll get to see not only things going on in our outdoor arena and indoor arena, but also in the classroom setting. So there's something for everyone. Then we also have the education inside of our trade show at our learning lounges where the companies, say, sponsor a one-hour education session, but you really get to learn about some very specific products and what they're doing to and make new innovation in the industry that's really either going to make you money or save you money. So that's all good for cattlemen.
I know that you talked about registration is filling up, hotels are filling up. Where can our listeners go to learn more about the opportunities that the convention will provide? You know, I know there's an app. Is it live yet? Where can they go to kind of glean the information and get them excited about this year's event?
The best place to go is to beefusa.org. All the convention information, the registration information is there, housing information is there. Again, it's we really make it really simple for people to register, and we really provide a great product for cattle producers. So we're really excited to go to Phoenix this year.
Well, and before I wrap up, we didn't even talk about the theme.
Blaze the trail to Phoenix. So we're really excited about, again, heading down to Phoenix. And rumor has it, it's been pretty cold across the country already. So now it's time to get out of the cold, go to Phoenix at the end of January, and get warmed up before we need to start calving those cows out in the spring.
I hear you. Marvin Cokes with National Cattle and Beef Association getting us excited about the 2018 Cattle Industry Convention and NCBEA trade show. Blaze the Trail to Phoenix this January 31st through February 2nd, 2018. Once again at the 2017 NAFB Trade Talk, I'm Jamie Johansson.
This is Farm City News Day by AgNet West. We will be back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
Control weeds from the start with the proven long-lasting power of Chateau Herbicide SW. Chateau controls more than 90 annual broadleaf and grass weeds in orchards and vineyards, including marestail, fleabane, mallow, and more. Unlike the competition, Chateau can be applied to non-bearing orchards and vineyards after planting for early protection. Take control and keep control of tough weeds with Chateau Herbicide. To learn more, talk to your PCA or visit valet.com/chateau. Always read and follow label instructions.
AgNet West Radio Network.
The House Budget Committee has voted 22-14 along party lines.
Your trusted agriculture news provider for the state of California. Join us every day to stay up to date with the latest agriculture news from AgNet West Radio Network.
Step right up and gaze upon this miraculous substance I hold in the palm of my hands. This little miracle can feed us, clothe us, give us clean, fresh water, and provide wildlife habitat for nature's critters. Ladies and gentlemen, I present to you the greatest soil on earth.
Learn more about soil health principles that can turn your soil into a star performer. Contact your local USDA Natural Resources Conservation Service office today to find out how. This message brought to you by USDA and this radio station.
There's nothing convenient about losing profit. A two-implant program utilizing component TE200 with Tylan as the terminal implant increases feed efficiency by 3.8% over Revelor XS. That's more than a $15 feed savings per animal. And only Elanco's component implants give you the added benefit of Tylan's abscess defense. Contact your Elanco sales rep or visit elanco.us/implants today. The label contains complete use information, including cautions and warnings. Always read, understand, and follow label directions.
As an almond grower, you work hard all day right from the crack of dawn. You love your crop, your land, and those who helped you raise it. Join Almond Board of California at the Sacramento Convention Center from December 5th through the 7th to learn how your operation can thrive. Hear from industry experts on new innovations and research, and connect with more than 270 exhibitors on the trade show floor and see their products firsthand. You care about your legacy, and the Almond Board does too. Go to almondconference.com to learn more and register.
You're going to need me.
You're going to need us.
All of us.
You're going to need our technical skills,
our math, our engineering skills.
You're going to need our help with your water, your air, your food.
You're going to need our organizational skills, our problem-solving skills.
You're going to need our determination, our honesty, our compassion.
You're going to need the next generation of leaders to face the challenges the future will bring.
And we promise, we'll be there when you need us.
Today, 4-H is growing the next generation of leaders. Support us at 4-H.org.
Welcome back to Farm City News Day by AgNet West. Now more of the agriculture stories you'll want to know today. Lawmakers in Congress are considering major changes to the nation's tax system after a pair of tax reform bills were introduced in both the U.S. Senate and the U.S. House of Representatives. Michael Clements has more with the National Farmers Union.
While the jury is still out on how the plans would impact farmers and ranchers' effective tax rates, new analysis shows that the plans, if passed into law, could have devastating consequences for farm program funding. Roger Johnson, president of the National Farmers Union, explains.
The tax plans being considered right now in both the House and the Senate are projected to cost $1.5 trillion, and Congress hasn't proposed any way to offset that cost. So we're staring down a $1.5 trillion hit to the federal deficit if these plans become law. Congress has rules that are written into law that do not allow for massive increases to the deficit like this. They are called PAYGO rules, which stand for pay-as-you-go. They require Congress to offset any increase in deficit spending with subsequent cuts to mandatory spending. Many folks already know this as sequestration, and it already takes a chunk of money out of farm program payments like ARC and PLC. The new Congressional Budget Office analysis out this week shows that because the tax reform bills would cost $1.5 trillion over 10 years, the Senate would need to cut mandatory spending programs by $150 billion per year. However, the amount of mandatory spending that we do that is subject to PAYGO is less than that $150 billion per year, which means all of the funding for these programs, including many of our Farm Bill safety net programs, would need to be eliminated.
Johnson says that trading any sort of tax reform for scrapping funding for farm programs would be devastating to family farmers and ranchers.
Family farmers and ranchers are in the midst of the sharpest economic downturn since the 1980s. Programs that support them through tough times should absolutely not be cut to pay tax cuts for the wealthy, which is what these plans would do. Unless Congress comes up with ways to pay for this deficit increase or passes a law to ignore the deficit, family farmers and ranchers are looking at major, major cuts to their safety net. All funding for our commodity programs like ARC and PLC, the dairy program, conservation programs like EQIP and REAP, rural development, research programs, and even administrative costs for administering crop insurance are completely at risk.
Johnson says NFU will continue to support efforts to simplify the tax code, but that the group adamantly opposes the bills as they are written.
Farmers Union members are in support of tax system reform that recognizes the unique nature of operating family farms and ranches in the 21st century. But these bills, as they are written now, are mostly handouts for the wealthiest in our country, and they are paid for by either eliminating funding for some of our most important farm programs or strapping our children and grandchildren with another $1.5 trillion in debt. Both are disastrous trades that we simply cannot support. Farmers Union will continue to advocate for a more simple, progressive tax code that does not risk programs vital to the livelihoods and well-being of American family farmers and ranchers.
For more information about National Farmers Union and current tax reform efforts, visit nfu.org. Michael Clements reporting.
A Department of Agriculture nominee is continuing his work as Iowa's Agriculture Secretary while he awaits Senate confirmation. Our NAFB News partner, Von Kettleson, reports.
Well, visiting right now with Iowa Agriculture Secretary Bill Northey, and of course, your name has been put in nomination to be a Deputy Undersecretary of Agriculture at USDA in Washington. Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue very much in your corner. We've had a little bit of a roadblock from Senator Ted Cruz, and things are kind of in limbo right now, it sounds like.
You know, they are. In the meantime, I can't do a lot about that, so I get a chance to be able to travel around the state of Iowa, and it's great to be able to see some of the neat projects that are being done around the state of Iowa. So we'll see when that roadblock gets cleared. But as of now, I'm Secretary of Ag. It could be a matter of days. It could be a matter of months.
In the meantime, I'm sure plenty to keep you busy.
Absolutely. There's a lot of great things going on. And this time of year, we have farmers finishing up harvest around. We still got a couple million acres of corn in the field here in Iowa, and that's getting done. And we have some cover crop seeding going on. We have some terraces. We were in southwest Iowa, saw some terraces being built as well. So a lot of good work that's getting done, although it's middle of November, and we don't know how many more days of good weather we have to get that work done.
Anything else?
I certainly just appreciate the opportunity to have been the Iowa Secretary of Agriculture. I may get a chance for many more days. I don't know. But it's been a wonderful honor, and I sure have enjoyed every single day as Secretary of Agriculture.
Iowa Agriculture Secretary Bill Northey. I'm Von Kettleson reporting from Iowa.
Right now, farmers are in the middle of negotiating 2018 cash rents. This while their incomes have been depressed for 4 years. Todd Gleason reports agricultural economist Gary Schnittke has been working up a way for landowners and their tenants to feel better about bringing cash rents down.
The University of Illinois Number Cruncher has developed a formula to derive cash rents from a field's PI. That's the Productivity Index. It's based on a benchmark, in a fashion, to USDA's cash rents survey and uses a geographic adjustment tied to the CRD, that's USDA's crop reporting district. This allows for demand patterns in an area to show up in the formula. Schnittke says the PI and the CRD adjustment explains 91% of variability in the average cash rents as reported to USDA. Here's how the formula, he says, works in the state of Illinois.
Just to give you an example, if you're in east central Illinois, in the eastern CRD, the CRD index is 26, which means you take your PI, multiply it by 2.79, subtract 147, and add 26 to it, and that'll give you an average cash rent for that parcel.
If you fill all those numbers in for a farm in Champaign County with a PI of 134, the expected cash rent for that farm with a 134 PI would be $250 per acre. This benchmark, says Schnittke, provides a jumping-off point from which farmers and landowners can discuss adjustments based on current economic conditions. By the way, the PI of farmland in Illinois, many farms around the nation for that matter, can be found in a free online tool called Acre Value. Look for it at www.acrevalue.com. I'm Todd Gleason.
For more on any of the stories you've heard here this morning, visit our website at agnetwest.com. You can also find us on Twitter at agnetwest or myself at Sabrina W. Hill. This has been Farm City News Day by Agnet West, and I am your host, Sabrina Hill. Have a wonderful day.